I'm Kay Bess, and this is The Beehive. Women in voiceover, the voices of the fairer sex that keep the wheels of commerce and creativity moving in this country. Voices you hear every day, but names you likely don't know until now. Hey everybody, welcome to The Beehive. We are smack dab in the middle of the holidays. We're approaching the end of the year, and I wanted to bring to you a two-part series. The first part on the subject of our failures, and the next week, talking about our hopes and dreams for 2018. So as to part one, if you listen to the podcast, you know that I have this penchant for asking my guests about the difficulties that they've encountered in their journey through voiceover. And I happen to be reading a new book by Tim Ferriss. If you don't know who Tim Ferriss is, he is he's an interesting guy, kind of what you might call a life hack guy. I know that's a bit of a narrow definition, but as I understand it, he's an investor of sorts, and he also is remarkably curious about life. And so he is about the business of asking questions, I think is the best way I would put it. He asks a lot of questions about life, and he asks experts in their fields about their lives and their journeys and their experiences. And I think that's what makes him a life hack guy, because he does a lot of culling and curating the best of thought and ideas and products even. I don't mean for this to be a big fat commercial for Tim Ferriss, but it is. And he does have a wonderful podcast, The Tim Ferriss Show, and he also has a mailing list. And if you are on it, you get what's called a Five Bullet Friday email. Very brief, five things that he is sort of all about that particular week, what he's listening to, what he's reading, the thought that he is pondering, his favorite product for that week. And I think there's something else. But anyway, I've just found his whole approach very fascinating. And I suppose as I am a curious person too, I think that's what has drawn me to him. Anyway, his latest book is Tribe of Mentors. And lo and behold, one of the questions that he asks of this collection of very successful people just happens to be, what is your favorite failure? So this question, of course, resonated with me, and I thought that I would take a page from Tim Ferriss's playbook and ask a number of successful women in voiceover to tell us all about their favorite failures, those things which really troubled them, but somehow propelled them and redirected or refocused their lives or their careers. So I'm thrilled to bring you these stories from these women that I love, whose work I admire, who at various times in my own voiceover career, I have looked at them and thought, wow, how can their lives and their careers be so perfect? You know, and it really, it's just testament to the fact that nobody's life, nobody's career, nobody's path is perfect. I mean, we see on Facebook everybody's perfect life, right? But that's just, it's not real. So I'm just grateful that these women are sharing their stories, and I hope that you find them encouraging, and I hope you find them relatable, and that you find in these women comrades. You know, we are we're sisters in arms here in the pursuit of this career that we love. So I also need to say that there, you know, these stories have varying degrees of what I would call intensity, you know, if you will. Sometimes it's just a little thing that transforms your thinking. Sometimes it's a big event. Sometimes it's traumatic. But they're all worthy of consideration. All of these things that change us. So just keep that in mind as you listen. Everybody's story is different, but every story is valuable. So I hope that you will be ultimately lifted up in listening. Next week, we'll have hopes and dreams for 2018. But right now, without further ado, here we go. Favorite failures. Happy listening. Here is Larissa Gallagher.
My favorite failure. Too many. too many. Probably the one that best comes to mind, and I don't know if I've talked about this before, but my favorite failure was actually after years of trying to make it in theater and a musical theater. I was working with some friends who had created a musical based on Eurovision, which is a really big televised international song contest that's huge in Europe and Australia. And they had written this musical, which was unbelievable. And they asked me if I'd be interested in playing one of the characters. And I jumped at the chance, mainly because it was a comedy role. The girl actually had to sing terribly off key in different places, and I just thought it was hilarious, and their writing was really clever, and the show was fantastic, and I embraced the chance. And apparently a lot of people had turned the role down because of the fact that it wasn't going to be able to show them off to their best. But I didn't care because I thought it was awesome. And yeah, and I workshopped the show with them for like a year and a half, I think it was. I was flying down from Sydney to Melbourne. Anyway, finally the show got picked up by a producer who was going to tour it around Australia. And I was kind of given, you know, given the nudge, nudge, wink, wink from the original writer and director saying, oh, you should be fine. We think you're hilarious. There's not going to be a problem here. And I didn't get it. And the show went to a really good friend of mine, which was really tough. And I think the thing that was so difficult was it felt like I had created this role and I had put everything into this and I had taken a chance where other people hadn't, and that somehow I wasn't good enough because this one producer had decided that I wasn't right for the role that I had a huge part in creating. And that was really tough, and it actually spiraled my career, and I gave up theatre and acting after that. And kind of moved back from Melbourne to Perth and reimagined, restarted, recreated from the ground up. I kind of had a bit of a mini breakdown thinking, what is this career that I've worked so hard towards if it's only going to be told you're not good enough to play you? But then, as is often the case, that you don't see the rainbow through the clouds, is that's when I started working in radio and started doing a bit more voiceover. That's when I ended up meeting my now husband, who then brought me on the journey to America and then to Los Angeles, and now to here doing what I'm doing, back working in the entertainment industry, which I said I would never set foot in again, and being very successful and incredibly happy. And if I hadn't have gone through that really awful time in my life, I wouldn't have been able to break through and be here. I might have done that show and been happy, but who knows what would have come after that. And yeah, so I am actually forever grateful for that particular failure, which will now be deemed my favorite failure. Because, yeah, going back to that statement, is when you're in these moments, it feels like everything you worked towards has been destroyed. And then when you look back, that was one person's opinion and it didn't work out, but look what I got out of it. So, yeah.
Sissy Jones.
A long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, I was a working stiff in the Silicon Valley, and I hated it. I didn't enjoy the work. The people, some of the people were really great and some of the people were really not. But it just felt like, oh my God, is this all there is to life? I couldn't imagine doing that for the next 30, 40, 50 years. You know, there's only so many corporate ladders you can be interested in climbing, I suppose. And I was working for one particular breed of terrible, and she did not care for me, and she fired me. She fired me, and I'd never been fired. I don't get fired. And it was devastating. I had to take a big, huge step back and think about what had happened. And, you know, I came home to my fiance at the time, and, you know, I was like, I got to call my recruiter. I need to figure out how to get another job. And, you know, what the hell am I going to do? And my now husband said to me, you've just found this thing, voiceover. I just started taking classes a couple of months prior. And he said, you've found the thing that you love, and you're actually good at it. Do you know how rare that is? How rare for people to not only find something they're passionate about, but that they're actually good at and you can actually make a living at? Don't go back to another corporate job. Don't go do something that you hate. You have to follow this through. And I did. And 7 years later, I wake up every morning with a spring in my step, as ridiculous as that sounds. So incredibly grateful to get to do what I do with the people that I do and the jobs that I do. And if I hadn't been fired, I probably would still be trying to climb that corporate ladder and make the corporate money. And thank God I got fired.
Sally Saffioti.
I feel really grateful that Kay asked me to answer this question about my favorite failure. And it was such a tricky question for me to answer. I mean, I think it's a tricky question in general because, you know, there have been so many missteps I've made and things that didn't really work out or go the way that I wanted them to. But one example I had was that, you know, I desperately wanted to have a career on stage and film and television. And I was completely fortunate enough to have that, but it never brought in enough money so I could support myself consistently doing just that. And at one point, I just felt like I had failed completely because I wasn't going to be able to pursue it anymore. And then I got my way into voiceover through an incredible connection. And, you know, that totally changed my life. And it gave me the ability to support myself and my son and to still be able to be open to pursuing stage and film and theater when that comes up, which I'm really hoping is going to start coming up more often in my life because, gosh, do I miss it. But, you know, if I had to quantify it and say what was my biggest failure, you know, it's kind of a touchy subject, but I would have to say that it was my marriage. You know, in my heart, I knew that the person I married, he wasn't right for me. We had tried to call off the wedding. We got separated shortly after we got married. But my personal history growing up, you know, I had a challenging childhood, and it kept me moving forward towards this person that might not have been the best person for me, and just really, really, really trying to make this impossible situation work and work on my own demons and try to make a marriage work that was maybe never going to work. And all of that led to just many, many painful, soul-shredding years. And at the same time, it felt absolutely impossible to get out of it. And even more impossible when we had a child together, which we both really, really wanted. My ex and I had very similar goals in life and dreams and desires, but absolutely completely different core values and ways of going about achieving our goals and dreams. And certainly we made and make very different life choices. And with a child, separating felt just twice as impossible as I ever could have imagined. But we did separate while we were seeing our fifth couples counselor, and my son was 15 months old. And I think it was absolutely the most challenging, painful time in my life that I can ever remember. And I can't believe I got through it. You know, I was like the sole provider for my son and I, and I don't have any family, and I still had to keep working to support my child and I. And I was able to, thankfully, because of voiceover, bring him to my sessions with me and very often work from home. I did have to totally give up my, you know, my on-camera and theater career, but I have this amazing child who is now about to turn 9 years old, and I truly could not imagine my life without him. He's the most wonderful thing that has ever happened to me. And if not for that marriage, I wouldn't have my son, Max. And I think Max is by far one of the most wonderful human beings I will ever know in my entire life. So out of that adversity came what I would call, you know, the greatest gift in my life. So you never know where things are going to lead you. And I guess I'd like to say thank you to my ex-husband for that. And mostly, you know, thank you to my incredible son, Maxwell Henderson Mitchell. otherwise known as Max.
Melanie Minichino.
So I attended one of the best art schools in the States for photography. And it was not a state school, which meant not state school prices. So before I started school, my parents made a deal with me. They said they would pay for 4 years of state school or 1 year of private school. And of course, I went to the private school. And halfway into my second year there, I took a look at my debt and my real passion wasn't there. And I dropped out. I was really ashamed of that. And I really did feel like a failure, especially with all my friends going to school. And I was the only one who did that. Everyone was, you know, in their campuses and dorms and having that college life that I just was not part of. And to this day, I'm still embarrassed about it, strangely, until I look at the debt that my friends have and I don't. But also the path that I ended up following. You know, I dropped out. I started acting class right away. I was working in lots of different bars as a cocktail waitress. I actually would lie and say that I was 21, but really I was 18, just so I can get a job. I was just trying to make my rent, living in a tiny apartment, getting home at 5 a.m., and didn't really have a clear, you know, step-by-step path or handbook of what to do. I didn't really have any other friends in the arts. So I was kind of just like, let's see what happens. But, you know, if I hadn't followed the fear and really listened to what it is I wanted to do, then I would never be here in LA with a career in voiceover and acting and really living my passion. And if I'm honest, there's definitely still a part of me that doesn't like telling people that I never finished college, but that's part of me. That's part of what makes me. And it is my favorite failure. You know, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else in my life right now, and I really have no regrets. And I don't know where I would have been if I would have finished school and then had this degree in photography and been like, oh, well, I don't want to do this. So I'm thankful for that, and I'm thankful for my intuition and my gut and actually listening to it. And I'm also thankful that I'm not in, you know, hundreds and thousands of dollars of debt, because that would suck.
Mary Weiss.
This is Mary Weiss, and this is my favorite failure. It's kind of a small one, but it's one of those little bitty ones that creates this shift internally. It happened when I was a grad student. I was an MFA candidate at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and I was studying theater with a focus in acting. They had the grad students teach the undergrad acting classes, the basic acting classes. And I would have two classes a semester, mostly non-majors. So each class had about 15, 16 students, and I would have maybe two theater majors in the class with me. And they had a book they wanted us to use. And, you know, I mean, it's a college. We have to give tests and we have to take roll and all these things. And I was just out of, you know, undergrad myself. I was a little nervous and, you know, and I'm in charge. I'm supposed to know everything. And I've always been one of these students where, you know, I've always had good grades and I'm like a little bit of teacher's pet. And I sometimes pick the hardest assignments and I just sort of love to know what I'm doing. Even as an actor at that time, I was a little too tight with my own process. I like really plotted things out. I did a lot of homework and I wanted to know what I was doing. So here I was teaching these, I say kids, but really they were just a few years younger than I was. And one day we were in class doing some exercise. And I really don't remember what the exercise was. I do remember, though, that the entire class was up on its feet and they were all doing something. But after a very short time, it was obvious that this exercise was not working. And I could see their faces, like they were looking at each other like, what are we doing? Why is she making us do this? And I don't know what it was, but I literally threw my hands up and said, okay, everybody stop. And they all looked at me and I went, this is not working and I don't always know what I'm doing. So let's do something else. And it was a little moment, but it was actually kind of a big thing for me that like a group of people who were looking to me for some sort of leadership or having answers. And I was able to go, I don't know. And that didn't work. Let's just move on and do something else. And I think, you know, I don't know if it was the beginning of it, but I know that it's always stuck with me because it really informed my ability to you know, just roll with it and improvise. Also, as a teacher, I really loved teaching because it helped me see it as a collaborative process, which I think really informed my acting as well, that I didn't have to have all the answers, that the people I was working with, even my students, were teaching me as well, and that I had things to teach them that weren't just necessarily in lesson plans and out of some book. It could also come from, you know, sort of trusting my own instincts and the spontaneity of, you know, doing things and playing off of them and stuff. I've never forgotten that. It was just a little thing, but actually very big. So that is my favorite failure, or one of my favorite failures, because I know I have more than one, as we do. So there you have it.
Roberta Solomon.
I had a background in theater when I started college. I'd done a lot of theater in high school, but I became a biology major because I also really loved science. But after my freshman year interning in a laboratory, which I realized that I just kind of hated, and then nearly flunking out of chemistry, I decided that I probably wasn't meant to be a scientist. So I changed my major to theater and spent the next 2 years pursuing that degree. Well, one of the degree requirements, though, was that you had to do an unpaid internship for a semester with the Repertory Theater on campus. My parents didn't have a lot of money, and by then I was basically paying for my own schooling. I was waiting tables, and I just really couldn't afford to put in the time on an unpaid internship. At the same time, I'd been cast in the world premiere of this play, and on stage during a performance, I had this epiphany that I didn't really want to be a stage actress. So I'm like, okay, what am I going to do now? So with about a year to go before graduation, I just decided to take a break. And the next semester, I took classes that I've just always wanted to take. I took art history and etymology. I sang with this great choral ensemble. And one of my choir mates was a friend from high school who'd gone to work at the campus radio station. And the station, he said, was looking for additional announcers, and he suggested that I apply for the job. I had no experience, but he said that wasn't a problem. He said, look, they just want somebody who can pronounce the composer's names correctly. They'll train you to do the rest. They're going to train you to use the equipment. So I thought, okay, what the heck? So I auditioned, and I got the job. Well, I had to take a test to get my third-class radio operator's license, and as I studied this, I discovered that audio totally fascinated me. And then I went on the air for the first time late on Christmas Eve night, when nobody was listening, I'm sure. And as soon as I opened the microphone and said my name, I knew that this was what I was supposed to be doing. This was what I was put on the face of the earth to do. It was theater without the parts of it that I didn't like. It was science without the parts of it that freaked me out. And I felt this tremendous sense of pride and responsibility and continuity that I was joining this community whose purpose was to use their voices to connect. And that feeling has never left me, even though my career has expanded from radio to TV to voiceover. I failed as a scientist. I failed as a stage actress, but I failed my way into the work that I was put on the face of the earth to do. And I failed my way into a career that I've never stopped loving. I fail every day, and I'm always starting over. I lose more auditions than I win. I've got a giant list of clients I once worked for that I'm not working for now. I've spent thousands of dollars on marketing that didn't work, countless hours pursuing work that didn't pan out. I've been fired by clients because they want a guy or somebody younger, or the show is ending, or the station's changing formats, or they're going a different direction. I've been told by agents that there is no work for women, that I'm too young, I'm too old, I'm too strong, I'm not strong enough, blah, blah, blah. But every failure, even though it really hurts, is a chance to ask myself, am I really supposed to be doing this work? Do I really still love it? And if the answer is yes, even when I'm failing, then I put my head down and I do the work to study and train, and I feel my way into the next opportunity. That's the way it's always been. And I guess I hope I continue to fail, because it's working so far.
Erica Ishii.
I auditioned for and was rejected from, I believe it was 7 different graduate schools for an acting MFA. During my undergraduate years, I had stopped acting professionally and scratched that theater itch in the UCLA Shakespeare Club, but I had this notion that I wanted to be a serious actor, capital S, capital A, and I thought that grad school was the best way to accomplish that. So I submitted my applications, and I went on an epic and harrowing road trip with my best friend to attend the auditions in San Francisco. I had a headshot, a resume, two or three contrasting monologues. I acted my heart out, and I was super vulnerable, and a few weeks later, I was politely rejected from each and every school. It was humbling. But I picked myself back up, and I applied and was accepted to a program at the Lee Strasberg Theater and Film Institute here in Los Angeles. I took classes at the Upright Citizens Brigade. I sought out private coaching and group classes, pretty much anything that I could do. And via a roundabout journey of twists and turns and lots of rejection, I have the career that I have today. I'm lucky enough to see my life moving in a direction that I'm happy with. And I think about how if I'd been accepted to any of those programs, I wouldn't have made the friends that I did. I wouldn't have gained the skills and made the connections that I made. I wouldn't be in the right place at the right time to have the life that I have now. So I'm always going to be grateful for that.
Paula Tiso.
So here's my story. My favorite fail, as it were. Though I will say, I try not to look at anything as a fail. And if I do look at my fails, I really honestly can't say from this fail, I was pushed in this direction of success. So how do you see the upside? Let me tell you this story. So years ago, I was at a callback. It was a callback for a show, promos for a show. It was super important to me. And one thing that I had always been told, and a really good piece of advice from an older voiceover actor, was just leave your best audition and go, move forward. If you hear back, that's fantastic. If you don't, well, you've moved on. Okay, well, that's how I kind of did everything. This callback, I felt a little differently. So I followed up on it, and I found out that I did not book it. I also found out who did book it. And at that time, years and years ago, at this agency that I was at then, I was always on the same auditions with this particular person. We were always, you know, same kind of type. Well, she booked it and I didn't. And it was kind of, had gotten to be kind of a theme. And rather than having moved on from that one, I had held on to it. And it hit me really hard. So, I mean, it literally hit me hard. So I railed at the heavens. And I just indulged myself. And now you're all waiting for me to go. And what was good about this, Paula? What was good? What did you learn? Well, I did learn something. I learned that I'm still here. I'm still doing this. I got over it, picked myself up, a couple of days later. And I'm still working in voiceover. I'm still supporting myself and I'm still enjoying it. And that's all that you can do. So sure, I could have actually given up then. I really could have. I felt it. It was a huge blow. But I didn't. I got up and I went back to work. So that would be my fail or obstacle or challenge or however you want to look at it. And it's not my favorite. It's just something that stuck out to me because I didn't follow my usual leave my best audition, move on. I followed up. Which is not to say that you shouldn't follow up. I think sometimes you need to. I think that's important. You know, back to the drawing board. What did I do? What can I do better? But sticking with it, and you have to believe in yourself, even when it seems like you're the only one who does. I hope you weren't looking for some amazing story that I didn't book that show, but the producer loved me so much, they moved me onto another show and I made $1 million. That would have been nice. Kind of linear, and that has not been the direction of my career. Not linear, I don't think. It's just kind of unexpected and new opportunities and not knowing what direction I'm going to be going, just being as professional as I can be and leaving my best audition. Stick with it. Just stick with it. And good luck.
The end. Ta 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 ta.
Melissa Hutchison.
I would have to say that one of the most difficult and frankly quite scary times of my life, favorite failure moment, if you will, was when my anxiety reached a level that was so high, it started giving me panic attacks, debilitating I think my brain is broken. Holy shit, is this how life's going to be forever? Panic attacks. This happened to me at a time in my career when, as a voiceover actress, that I was actually on the up and up. So it kind of hit me from out of nowhere. It was just a lot of transition going on, and most of it very good transition, but something just kind of snapped, and all of a sudden I found myself in this physical and mental state of hell. So obviously that didn't make it very easy going into a recording session to perform and do the job that I had dreamed of doing and was doing. So of course this was not acceptable. I was actually pretty open from the beginning about what was going on with me. And, you know, I told people what was going on. And the funniest thing happens when you open up to people. I mean, I just randomly tell people on the street what was happening with me, because that would be a little cuckoo bananu. But friends and family and, you know, just people I met who seemed to be able to relate. And I was surprised at how so many people were experiencing the same thing or had in the past or were actually currently going through it. And by opening up to these people, all these other doors opened as well. A certain friend would refer me to an amazing self-help book she had read. And yes, I am now a self-help book reading, listening human being. Another person helped me identify possible triggers for what might be setting all this anxiety into action that would trigger panic attacks. And little lights at the end of the tunnel were starting to shine and just were becoming brighter and brighter as I put the work into finding ways to heal myself. You know, it wasn't like, cool, and I was all great, and it was over, and we're done, and I was healed. It's a daily practice that I have to do to remind myself and keep myself grounded. But the coolest thing about getting through something that feels so difficult, and in the time that it's happening, it feels so prominent and desperate. And when you start to get out of that situation or feel completely free of that situation, you learn so many nifty things that help you go forward in your life and give you a different outlook, a positive outlook. As how this ties into my career, I had always been aware of things like saying positive affirmations and doing dream boards and meditating and visualizing what you want in your life. But I kind of practiced these things and, you know, I just kind of half-assed, if, you know, that's probably the best way to say it. But going through this experience and learning so much about myself and overcoming this devastating anxiety, panic part of my life, my existence, I really started fully implementing these ways of positive living into my life on a daily basis. And lo and behold, these amazing visions I saw for myself started to come to life before my eyes. And I know it sounds hippy-dippy, but this is truly powerful stuff. A lot of people seek advice on how to get into the voiceover industry. And I, of course, tell them, take the basics, take some classes, get good at networking, don't touch the microphone, all the basic stuff you need to know. But what I really try to put weight on is get out of your fears. And it takes work. It's not just voiceover. In all things you want to accomplish, there will always be fears. That this is natural, that this is realistic. Those fears can stop you completely in your tracks, or you can find ways to make peace and then go forward. And it takes practice, it takes time, and it takes finding love and empathy for yourself, and it takes mindful meditation, and my personal favorite, visualization. This is just still a daily practice with me, and I feel the more time that goes by and the more that I implement this into my life, the just more awesome and better and awesome and cool things get.
Rebecca Davis.
I have been an actress all of my life, since I was the age of 6, starting out in New York, doing theater, touring theater, mostly theater, some on camera, yada, yada, yada. Pretty much almost everything I've ever auditioned for, I've gotten. Then I went to school and got my BFA, did more theater, eventually ended up in LA to go to UCLA for my master's in acting, do more theater. And then I started doing on camera. And the same thing, I was doing really well. Almost everything I auditioned for, I got. And then through a whole long other story, I ended up doing voiceover for several years. So I guess what I'm leading up to is there was a point where I was about to drop everything. My career wasn't going as well as I'd hoped. I mean, it's a daily rejection. We know that as being actors, but I didn't have to deal with that as much before. But this was every day I'm getting rejected. I'm auditioning for things and trying to tell myself, no, it's not about me. It's something else that they were looking for. I sounded like the producer's ex-wife or, you know, someone that they knew or their mama or whatever. Mentally trying to go through those steps and tell myself, it doesn't mean I'm doing a crappy job, doing the best that I can. But at the end of the day, it's hard to believe that when you're putting yourself out there every day and you're getting good feedback from workshops. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn here because it sucked. And it's still really, really hard. But anyway, getting back to the favorite failure, there was a point that last year where I had been doing campaign for a very long time, and suddenly I found out I was being replaced. And not told, but because I knew other people had the audition to replace me. I had an ongoing job with a client for, I think it was 3 years, maybe four. And then all of a sudden, they told me they're not going to be doing that project anymore with the company that they were working with for Vanity Fair. And it wasn't that I was doing a poor job, but that income totally stopped. And then there were other things that were all happening at the same time. And I couldn't... I don't know, my soul couldn't handle it, and I was ready to walk away from everything. My goodness, I was thinking, okay, what kind of nonprofits can I get into? What else can I do with my life? And that little voice was like, you suck. Then that other little voice was like, you're awesome. Your time will come. I didn't know what to do with that. And I talked to some friends, got some support, and they talked me out of it, luckily, because just after that, when I was thinking about it, I suddenly booked the best job. It was actually a dream job. But when it comes out, I will be blasting it to the hills because it's something that I've been wanting to be part of for so long. And, you know, since then, it has still been, and it continues to be this up and down struggle all the time. But kind of getting through that and then believing in the universe. And then after that, I got another job that I've been really wanting. And after that, I got another. And I'm still losing out on jobs all the time. But I guess the success in that is the universe kind of told me, hey, this is what you're supposed to be doing, and stop thinking that way and thinking poorly of yourself. Just do it. And now, despite it all, I still believe that this is what I was meant to do.
Rena Marie Volano.
My favorite failure came in the summer of 2002. I was 29, living in Boise, Idaho. But I am a hard head. It's very stubborn. And so oftentimes there's a lot that happens before I get it. So the events leading up to that failure really started about 2 years before that. For much of my 20s, I lived a wild, passionate existence in some really beautiful places, Bozeman and Big Sky, Montana, Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Now, I would always find a way to do my craft in these places. I'd work in radio, I'd do the accompanying voice work and production, but I could never fully commit to the passion, this passion I had for that work, enough to really make something out of it. I was too distracted, you know, by life and love and my own struggles with myself and relationships and just trying to figure out how I fit in the world. Well, in the end of 2000, I'd lived in Jackson for almost 5 years, and this is where it kind of started, these events started happening, if you will, that led to my ultimate favorite failure. I'd been doing freelance VO for about 3 years at that point, but sparingly. I mean, I'd narrate a piece here, do a radio commercial there. There was really never much money involved. I certainly couldn't make a living. And then in October of 2000, after yet another failed relationship, I was just battered and broken and sad. And, you know, my poor little soul was crying out for fulfillment, for fulfillment that was real, that came from within me, that wasn't dependent on, you know, someone else, I guess. And the most fulfilling thing that I had experienced at that point was the feeling I had when I did voiceover. And I realized that I had to follow that dream of doing VO, and I needed to find more opportunities that I knew were not in Jackson. And as difficult as it was for me to make the decision to leave that place, because I very much love that place, I knew I had to do it. So I left. And from there, I went to Seattle for a year, did a little bit of VO, tried to kind of break into voiceover there, but it wasn't really coming together. So I started looking into radio work. And there wasn't anything in Seattle, but there was an opportunity for a radio job in Boise. And I thought, well, okay. So I took it. And a few months after moving there, I met someone and got into another relationship. Well, 6 months later, it was over, and I was again so sad, just heartbroken. And I thought, God, another failure. I'm never going to succeed at this. Blah. Well, it turns out that was the doozy, because at that moment, I decided I was done with relationships, and that I was just going to focus solely on my work. And I did it. I committed. I stayed single for about 6 years and just built this thing, this career. It was the best decision I ever made. The most fulfilling work I've done has been in the years since that moment. And more importantly, that turning point really permanently shifted the priority I placed on my work and its role in my life. It made me value my voiceover career more and, frankly, appreciate the pure fulfillment it brings me. So I should probably write that guy a thank you letter.
Rebecca Reedy.
Well, I have sort of a spectacular array from which to choose, some of which are actually kind of Googleable. But I got to tell you, it was really hard to tack the word favorite onto them for me. I mean, that one, some of them just still send me into the corner to bang my head and suck my thumb. So, I had a hard time choosing what I would consider a favorite failure, but I came up with a couple. Favorite failures. I wanted to invest in Bitcoin 3 years ago. Didn't do it. Procrastinated. Slacked. 2 months ago, my girlfriend's 12-year-old son was looking at my IMDb page and congratulated me on that video game award I was nominated for 3 years ago. I was? He said, yeah, you were nominated along with the cast of Saints Row for Best Ensemble Performance. And I said, did we win? How did I not know about that? Fail, 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 fail. I think my biggest failure, the one that's truly in my way right now, it's not my favorite failure, but I guess it is in the way that I can now identify what it is and what I need to overcome. My biggest failure is the feeling that nothing I have to say is what anybody else will want to hear. I am a person who is very comfortable, clearly, with somebody else's words. Give me your words, honey. Let's do that. I can say it. I can make it. I can say it in a bunch of different ways. I'll tweak it. I'll give it different attitudes. But I have aspirations to write, and I have aspirations to do a blog and share things. But I so furiously self-edit that I can't get off go. It's the thing that's in my way for where I want to go next. And what is my plan? Get out there and fail with writing, with putting things out there. Just fail. Get comfortable in my discomfort. Curl into the discomfort, carve out a little nook, hang pictures on the wall, and just get comfortable in my discomfort so that it's not so scary anymore. I heard a great quote a while ago, and I quote it to my kids. It's everything you want is right outside of your comfort zone. So get comfortable in discomfort. Get out there and fail and fail and fail. Actively seek that failure so that I'm not afraid of it. It's okay. You'll bounce. You'll be fine. I strive to become a content creator. I strive to get over my damn self. I strive to put myself out there and follow my heart. I had no idea that that answer was going to fall out of my face. No idea. Totally planned on a different answer. It's very interesting.
And last, yours truly. My favorite failure feels like a couple of decades long. And I know it isn't, and I actually know it isn't even my failure. But that is how I have internalized a series of events that greatly affected my career. When I was 19 years old, I had what was called back in the day a demo deal with CBS Records. And what that meant was that they were going to record a single with me with a flip side. Y'all know what those are. Singles with flip sides, and see how it worked in the marketplace. And if it was successful, then they would continue with a full-fledged record. So this was in 1981. So you can figure out my age from there. At that time, I, like most, 19-year-olds, I think, I was full of dreams and full of wide-eyed naivete. And I'd had a lot of affirmation for being the singer that I was and being in musicals in high school and community theater, which was a big deal in Santa Barbara, and things like, being voted most talented and most likely to succeed and, those kinds of things, which when you're graduating high school are, they really boost and buoy your confidence. Anyway, so I was kind of riding high, if you will, and I truly felt like I was just full of starry-eyed hope, that my dreams were really going to come true. And I was working on this demo deal, and I was raped by the arranger on the recording project, who has since died. So there's really no point in me naming names because that would just serve to hurt his family, who came along years after and they had nothing to do with it. So I hope that wasn't too revealing, but it's so far in the past, that I think it's good to reflect on it and to see it for what it was. It's only been recently that I've really begun to understand the effect that had for quite a long period of time in my life. Because I couldn't even call it what it was. I mean, I never even told my parents. I told a couple girlfriends, but, the record was never finished. It was never released. And poof, there went my starry-eyed dream. From that point out, I developed a lot of anxiety. I went to college about a year after that. I think that my acting teachers always told me that I had a lot of potential, but that I was blocked, that I couldn't open up emotionally, that I couldn't, somehow they couldn't get access, to my emotional life. And I didn't really understand at the time. It isn't surprising then that I dropped out of college. I dropped out of USC. And that was on the heels of my having had a gigantic panic attack on the third or fourth day of my junior year. And I just had this overwhelming feeling that I had to get out of that class. I had to get out. I had to get away from these people. I had to breathe, and I couldn't breathe. And it was a really hot day in the end of August, And I left college. I never went back. And I was living with another actress in Beverly Hills. And I, for, maybe a year or so, I just buried myself in drugs and smoking a lot of cigarettes. Crazy, like 3 packs a day. I was crazy. It's all I did was smoke, And my panic attacks continued, no surprise. And then a couple of things happened. I decided that I really wanted to quit smoking. And so I realized I sort of had to replace this habit with something else. And so I decided to go back to church, believe it or not. I'm a preacher's daughter, and a church is a very nurturing place for me to be. So I went back to church. I quit smoking. I cried a lot. I had a lot. I feel like I cried. Oh, I filled the Pacific Ocean. Around that same time, while I was still sort of in a state of anxiety and depression, this is when I was flipping through a Dramalogue magazine and I found a workshop for voiceover, which was really rare back then. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And I felt quite drawn to it because it felt safe to me. I had had in my attempts at, you know, being an on-camera actress outside the University of Southern California, I had had a couple of incidents with meeting with agents who were kind of sleazy. And, you know, every door that was open to me seemed to require something of me that I was unwilling to give. And, but that it wasn't how voiceover was. And I took this class, and there was a casting director there who taught us and put us on reel-to-reel, and she took that reel-to-reel home, and she listened to it, and she called me the following Monday, and she pointed me to a class with Tom Pinto at Voice Tracks West, and Tom remains a dear friend. He was encouraging and, you know, every step of the way encouraging. He helped me make my first demo. He helped me submit that demo to three agents. I was signed with William Morris from that, and thus began my some 33-year-long career. So how is it that I can qualify that as a failure? You know, I feel like leaving college was my favorite failure, because I came from a family of multiple degree possessors. You know, both my parents had master's degrees. My brother has two master's degrees, one in divinity from Harvard and one in architecture from the University of Virginia. My sister has a bachelor's degree in theater arts from UCI and a teaching credential. And I couldn't even finish my undergraduate. So there was always a sense of I was wasting my potential and, you know, that kind of stuff. But the truth is, college wasn't for me at that time. I was meant to find this place of a strange place of safety. I don't mean safe in that I never took risks, but safety in the sense of I had something to offer that had to do with my talent, and my talent was received in an unadulterated way, if that makes sense. And so I am glad that I left college, even though I carried with me for a long time this sense that I couldn't live up to my family's values. And as a side note, that all came from me. My parents, you know, were nothing but encouraging of me in everything. So I realized after a while that I was simply on a different path, that I had different experiences. I had a different life than my siblings and my parents. My life is my own and my career is my own, and it continues to grow in ways that I never would have imagined. So I am really grateful for all of my experiences that led me to this day. As difficult as they were, as troubling as they were, as no, I mean, nobody wishes to be taken advantage of, and I certainly didn't. So I don't mean that I sort of accept it in that way, but I'm glad to be where I am, and I would not be where I am had I not lived all my days prior. So that's my favorite. Thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next week with Hopes and Dreams for 2018.
Thanks for joining me today in the Beehive. For podcast notes, pictures, and more information on my guests, visit the podcast website, thebeehivepodcast.com. Find me at my website, kbess.com. Follow me on Twitter at kbess, and subscribe to my channel on YouTube. If you've a mind to, please post a review of the podcast on iTunes. Kind words are like honey, sweet to the soul and good for the bones. Come back for more Women in Voiceover next time in the Beehive. Yeah.